Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Welcome to the Horror Hangout, a podcast where two bearded film fans watch the best and worst horror movies of all time and talk about them. Who knows what these films are going to, what category they're going to come under? Best, worst, who knows? My name is Ben Errington, and I'm joined by regular co-host, Mr.
Andy Conduit Turner. Hello, Ben. How you doing?
Hello. Hi there. Hello. Bonus episode. Bonus-ode. As we like to call it. You should have heard the bonusode klaxon at the beginning of this episode, which is from Taj Easton, which is very nice. I'm a big fan of it. Hopefully you are too.
I am. Sorry, I thought you were talking to the listeners.
I think I was talking to the listeners, but I left it open for you to jump in if you needed to, and you did.
Well, if you did respond to that, listeners, good on you. Please do.
We've got to fill that dead air. So we're about to do another franchise ranking episode. We did the Halloween franchise ranking last December we did it.
Yeah, so, time flies, doesn't it?
Time flies when you're watching all the movies. So we've got the Resident Evil movie franchise ranking to do today, which is fun. Something a little bit different, but...
Sometimes it's a little bit very fucking the same, isn't it?
I'm saying it's a little bit different, but yeah, it's very, very the same.
Sometimes there'll be a laser grid in about 50% of them.
Yeah. Even though I've definitely ranked these films, obviously, prior to this episode, and it was only a couple of weeks ago that I watched them all again, they are blurring into one. From about the end of 3, definitely all the way till 6, really does blur into one,
yeah,
for me. I think we discussed that we were going to do a Resident Evil game franchise ranking, and I think we still will do that eventually, but I guess because we're both big fans of the games, we thought it was a good idea to talk about the franchise ranking, because we've definitely mentioned, obviously we've reviewed the first movie on the show, mm-hmm. We've reviewed the Welcome to Raccoon City movie last year. And I guess we always talk about Resident Evil, the game franchise, the movie franchise, as something we're fond of. And me personally, I've got a very difficult relationship with these films. It's something that I've always got something to say, I feel. Perhaps not. That's not always a good thing, because sometimes when people say, I bloody love those Resident Evil movies, and I go, oh, strap yourself in.
I've got some hot takes coming at you. But no, Ben, I think you're... I admire you in many ways, obviously. But this particular way, I think you are such a font of optimism when it comes to these movies. In the run-up to Welcome to Raccoon City, I could see the hope in your eyes. You're like a little boy coming up to Christmas time. Santa Claus is going to bring you a bike. Even after that first trailer,
Santa's going to bring you a bike. Guess what? It's got no wheels. Oh no! Yeah, that's what it was like having that film.
It's made of sandpaper. What? How is that even possible? Well, it is
sandpaper on the handlebars. Ah. Yeah, I guess relentlessly optimistic, hopeful that, a great Resident Evil film will arrive, because, you know, I kind of want that. I'm really keen to have that. But rewatching these films, watching Resident Evil, Welcome to Raccoon City, maybe like the film I want doesn't exist and it's not possible to exist. But I know that there's a filmmaker out there who can make a better film than these films, because, yeah, they really grind my gears. They really get my goat. They really do.
There are some positive things to say, and I think we'll come to them, but generally, when we come to the films overarching, at least the majority of them, there are some things we can say about them, I think, which are admirable qualities. For one, Paul W.S. Anderson, he loves his wife, absolutely adores her.
Well, this is the thing.
He thinks she's brilliant.
So did you know, like, that they met and their relationship blossomed on the first film?
They weren't prior involved. That's a love story. That is great. You know, greatest love stories ever told. Romeo and Juliet, third, because it's actually quite sad. Yeah. Number two, this. Number three, the Taylor Swift song. No, sorry, number one, sorry, the Taylor Swift song.
I was going to say.
The greatest love story of all.
He's like, right, I enjoyed working on that film with you, Mila. I'm going to make an action franchise where you are the star. You're the centerpiece of that. And I'm going to make you look awesome and sexy in pretty much every scene.
You're going to have
You're going to have so many outfits, so many hairstyles. Even though it's a post-apocalyptic world, sometimes you are going to have a brand new haircut. I guess there are hairdressers in post-apocalyptic worlds. But Alice seems like something of a loner. Can't imagine her just going into a post-apocalyptic salon.
Maybe that's one of her, in some of the episodes where she has powers, maybe one of her powers is being able to cut your own hair really well.
Yeah, I see what you mean.
She does get a lot of powers.
Ah, yeah. We'll discuss that, and we'll discuss how some things in these films work. I say some, I mean very, maybe 5%, and why some other things don't work, and the reasons for that. I think as fans of the games and people who have played pretty much all of the games, I think we're well placed to be able to air our grievances and back them up with...
I think it's absolutely allowed, and I also absolutely recognise that it's unfair. Every time we'll criticise, well, it's not really like the games, is it? And then, you know, Welcome to Raccoon City comes out and we go, oh no, you've done it wrong.
I think I've got some... I've tried, definitely from watching these films, I've tried to break it down to make a point of why they're not as good as the games, and without trying to be unfair. Like, this is the thing. You don't want a film that is exactly the same as the games. You don't want fixed camera angles. You don't want the same actors and the same dialogue. And all of the same beats, story beats. Obviously, you understand, for a film, it needs to be different. However, I'll just make this one minor point before I go forwards. However, I think one thing that was key about Resident Evil is survival horror. You always feel like you're up against the odds. You're barely getting by. You haven't got enough bullets. You haven't got enough green herbs, first aid sprays. You're barely...
Don't want to use a first aid spray. It'll impact your ranking at the end. Exactly. You want to unlock something, you can't even use it.
You don't even want to save. You don't want to use your ink ribbon. You're on a knife edge, because at any moment, a hunter's going to take your head off, and then you're dead, and then You Are Dead comes up. What these films get completely wrong is survival horror is pretty much absent completely, because your main antagonist is Neo from The Matrix.
Yeah. And more so, probably, and sexier outfits.
Sexier outfits. Neo / Superman / I mean, maybe not Superman, but like someone with superpowers. And
also there's multiple clones of her as well. So even if you do get her, don't worry, there's another.
Yeah. Now, I completely understand that in some Resident Evil games, certain characters, Leon S. Kennedy, for example, well good at fighting. Hand-to-hand combat, great. But when it comes to... And of course, supernatural powers are involved as well, usually with the villains. Usually with the villains, they'll have some sort of supernatural power. Having your antagonist, primary protagonist, so overpowered, it kind of like removes the survival horror element. And I think that is so key to making it feel like a Resident Evil adaptation. That when that's gone, it just feels like an action film. And also, this is another thing I've noticed. In terms of T-virus-centered apocalypse caused by the Umbrella Corporation, in the games it works on a much smaller scale. Taking it worldwide just does not work. It does not.
Yeah.
It just does. It. There's so many, so much more to think about, and I feel like this, these films just don't do a good job of doing it.
It becomes Resident Evil 6, aka the worst one. I mean, we'll come to it, and I'm going to try. I'm going to say this up top, and I'm going to try and find something positive to say about every single one of these movies, about something that I did enjoy about it. Because I said when we came up, like, in terms of star rating on my Letterboxd list, I rated pretty much all of them the same. So it's really hard to pick an order here. So it's really been down to how memorable I found them and what I could really latch onto in each of these movies. But you're saying about all of these, you know, little aside into the world of business for anyone who's listening to Horror Hangout bonus episode for business advice. I think the big thing I would say of the whole Umbrella Corporation is just get HR to do a better job, because quite a lot of these entire viral outbreaks are based on really, like, disgruntled employees.
Yeah.
Just really poor management of your resources, really poor talent management, where if you just looked after people a little bit better, things this wouldn't have happened.
The Umbrella Corporation gets done dirty as a faceless organization. It's like in the games, I don't know, the threat just seems so much more, there's so much mystery and so much to uncover, and you're finding out more details every now and again. This is just bad guys monologuing pretty much constantly.
It's like the core, like the key principles of their organization are to be evil. So, oh yeah, we're an evil corporation.
That's literally it.
Profits really aren't important. We are actually out to this to directly be evil. And the other thing I'll say about these movies before we dive into them, especially the anime ones, your mates, the animated ones, they love a liquor, these movies.
Oh yeah.
They're all about liquors. They obviously got the template for the liquors down for days. Hot take for you, Hunters are better.
Oh, I do love a Hunter, yeah.
Much better.
I do love a Hunter. Well, yeah, they're so good. And this is the thing, that the introduction of the Hunter in the first game is iconic, and there's nothing you would look at from these films and go, that is iconic. Or they've taken an iconic moment from the games and made it the same or made it better. They've not done that. Also, inconsistency, I find, is something here. There's a lot of films end, and then by the time the next film starts, the ending of the previous film has been completely forgotten about.
Oh, well, I'll tell you what, why don't we use that as a point to join in on one I see that we agree on, our last pick for all of us, because that is the guiltiest party of this one.
So obviously, in terms of the how this episode is broken down, we're going to go through our list starting from the bottom. Now we're here. Mm-hmm. Start from the bottom, and as soon the first appearance of the film, we'll on any of our list, we'll discuss the film then, and then count down towards number one. Yeah. If it once it appears on our list, we'll obviously make, we won't talk about it again, but we'll just say this is where
it fell for me. Yep.
So,
but I know we both got the same number 10, right? So we are starting with the end. Resident Evil, the final chapter, is unless you've made any changes, both of our number 10s, right?
No, I've not made any changes. It's Resident Evil, the final chapter, 2016, the sixth installment in the live-action movie franchise. I definitely saw this at the cinema. Do you know what? I was trying to think about this. Did I see them all at the cinema?
I think I saw all except this one, because I've only just watched this one for the first time.
Okay. So this, as you mentioned, this vetoes the end of the previous movie, which was Retribution?
Retribution.
Retribution,
yes.
Is like when there's a big Lord of the Rings style, possibly Battle of Helm's Deep happening with every
outside the White House, and Wesker's kind of gone, oh, tell you what, you're our last chance, Alice. But then this film begins with her absolutely screwed over, going, oh yeah, Wesker got us, and he tricked us, even though he gave her her powers back. Was that part of the trick?
I mean, the whole giving powers, taking away powers, is she any different when she's not got her powers? Really?
She doesn't have psychic powers anymore.
That's still... I mean, you could remove that from all of the franchise, really, because it feels...
She just burns those birds up with it, really. Doesn't really do much else.
No, but, exactly.
But he gives her powers back. And then, yeah, this film begins with, he screwed us over. And all of the beloved characters that were with us at the end of the last one that had made it through the series this far, they're just gone now. Because they're not. None of them are in it anymore, are they?
That happens a few times. I think it happens at the end of Afterlife into Retribution with Claire and Chris, where...
Yeah,
they come to the boat.
Chris certainly disappears. Does Claire turn up with one of those? Yeah, I think Claire at least turns up in one of those vats.
Yeah,
maybe.
Oh,
but
we're kind of talking about a lot of them. Amnesia as a plot device, I struggle with that at the best of times. It is absolutely it is overcooked. Yeah.
Alice has got amnesia for days.
One of the films, Claire's got like amnesia. She had one of those things on her chest.
Jill Valentine gets a bit of it. Yeah, everyone loves a bit of amnesia in this, but not so much in this film. This is the film where, and it's weird to talk about it first, but everything goes full circle, and we have several, like we culminate in several versions of Alice. We've got the version of her that was a little girl that was also the Red Queen because she had an unnamed disease.
Also, third actress playing the Red Queen in this franchise, right?
Yeah. It's the problem with little kids, they grow up too fast.
But the actress in the first film was completely CGI, so it could have kept her CGI and looked the same.
Yeah, you're right. Three appearances of the Red Queen, three different little girls, and you're right, little CGI. They could have just used the CGI template, but who knows? I guess on this one, because they needed to make her look a bit like de-aged baby Alice.
Yeah, but it was an actress, wasn't it, playing?
Yeah.
It was an actress. They just found a... I wonder if it was a relation. Who knows? Who cares?
Then you had to have old lady Alice as well.
Yeah, I mean, I saw that coming, I think, when it showed the back of someone's head as an old lady and didn't reveal it. Obviously, yes, we are spoiling all of the Resident Evil movies. My original review of this, right, after I watched it in 2017 on the big screen. No, 2017, 2016, whenever it came out. I was fuming, it seems. The first thing I said was, this movie has a billion cuts. A billion. And there's a scene... where I think it is, again, is it this film or is it another one? What's the scene where Claire and Alice are both fighting Wesker and on a lift going up? Not Wesker, the other bad guy, this bad guy.
Jorah Mormont.
Yeah, that guy.
Yeah, the Game of Thronesman. Yeah, Captain Friendzone. It's this one. It's this one at the end. And you're right, Claire Redfield does turn up again in this one, probably with amnesia, but she... They fight each other on the way up, and of course, they're in a laser corridor at one point as well.
Yeah. So that particular scene, I watched back another two times to try and count the cuts in the action scene. It is a unbelievable mess. It's like, I think at one point, Alice like throws the guy backwards, and it shows it from about 12 angles. It honestly does. It's just, it's the most kinetic, ridiculous, it's just insane. And I find the action sequences are a mess. That combat prediction technology, oh my God.
Oh yes, because he has, that's the power that Captain Friendzone has. He has Sherlock Holmes powers, right? So it's like, if you grab the pen, there is only a 30% chance you'll get me, but he didn't foresee a whacking a grenade in his pocket and pulling the pin out.
Oh, yeah, of course. Didn't see that happening. But this may have the one of the worst moments, the moment where I literally reacted like I'd been punched in the gut, was when the big bad walks out in front of Alice and she goes, "I killed you." And he says, "Yet here I am." And then she like goes, "I killed your clone." Just makes this such a...
Yeah, she just worked it out. And you killed it. Out. And let's face it, in times of film releases, killed his clone, what, three, four movies? Kills him in number three? So you killed him you killed him three movies ago, and in real time, about 5-6 years?
Oh, man.
I think... And here he is. And he's in it again, because he's already been in this movie, a different version of him, the version of him that's a reverend that's driving around in the Mad Max universe.
Yeah. So, obviously, mentioning the laser corridor, and I mentioned before that there were no iconic moments in this film, it seems to think that the laser corridor is an iconic moment. I'm sure it's memorable. Sure, it is. Some would say it's iconic, I'm sure, yeah. But this film leans so heavily into it. It's like, that was cool from the first one, wasn't it? Let's put it in as many times as possible. Is it four in total? Four laser corridors?
I think it's been in that many events, right? It's got to have been. It's in one. It's in possibly three.
Yeah.
Definitely here.
It's definitely in three, because it's at the end of three, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's
possibly when she's escaping at the start of. Oh, I don't. Yeah.
So, a couple more notes I've written here is that it wants to be the Matrix. It wants to be the Terminator. Why are there even zombies in it? Like, because the existence of zombies is unbelievable. And also, less again spoiling. The way the what's it called? Antivirus is expelled into the air.
And yeah, you just gotta get it out in the air, then everything with T virus will ever
immediately
will
die. But what I hate about this film is that it calls itself the final chapter, but it's got like an open end to it. Like it ends, she's like, my work isn't done. I've still got
I guess she's become on a temp job though, because now she's still around riding about saving people.
Freelance.
Yeah, freelancing, but it's just because not all the monsters have died yet, because it's going to take a while for the wind to blow the antivirus about. So you got to wait until it's got everywhere. So if you want to do one more, then you maybe could, but they've kind of won. But the whole premise of this thing, like the antivirus has to be released in X amount of time. Otherwise, that's like the point of no return and all the goodies will be dead. All the survivors will be dead.
But they also, but they also say, it's going to take ages for the wind to carry it as well. So... might be years, and then there's
maybe knowing that there's hope will keep the survivors alive. They'll be like, oh no, we'll hold on a bit longer.
Yeah, okay. I think we both put this film incredibly low in terms of our rankings. It is a mindless action film that just isn't fun, because mindless action films I can deal with as long as they're kind of fun. This isn't fun. I feel like it takes itself too seriously. The legacies of certain characters from the games are just, like, there. And I like Mila Jovovich, but I don't like her Resident Evil. I find Alice as the main protagonist is intolerable. I don't know why. I just don't find anything she says or does. Like, I'm not related to her in any way or wanting her to win. I'm just like, we know she's going to win. Because for some reason... she's like, at least in the first movie, there was like a little bit of human, a weakness to her, and as she's rediscovering things, her amnesia's wearing off, we're learning those things as well.
Then she can kick a dog and stuff like that. Yeah,
but the literally, well, obviously we'll get into the second, but we'll get into all of them. Yeah, but her character arc from her character transition from the first movie to the second movie is unbelievable. and then her character transition from the second movie to the sixth, there's none. So it's like it goes from, I don't know, in terms of ass kicking, she's at 30% in the first film. And in the second film, she's at 95%. And then she sticks at 95% for the rest of the film. There's no, like, she doesn't earn the right to be that awesome.
Yeah, it's a bizarre rollercoaster. In the end, you say, we think she's going to die because she has the T-virus, but the gift of the old lady is... also all her memories, so she remembers just having a normal life, but is a woman in her prime with superpowers. off to live a best life. And you're right, Ben. I think in at its heart, it is a mindless action movie, but it's a mindless action movie that requires and is looking to pay off five other movies worth of content and draw it all to a close. My positive here will be fair play to them, because in many ways they do it. They call back to pretty much everything apart from the end of the previous film. And they do their best to tie it all off. And there's that little bit in the middle where it's sort of Cube for a little bit, where people pull out of the things into.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's crazy. It's crazy and it's nonsense.
It's crazy and it's nonsense. And I'm getting to a point now where I don't know if I can ever. I mean, that's the second time I've seen that movie. I don't know if I can do it anymore, because I think the original one I've definitely seen four or five times now, and I'm even starting to lose a bit of patience with that. So all of the others, I think I'm just done.
I don't think I ever need to see that one or some of them again. I might revisit one or two and we'll come to those. Yeah. But yeah, this one, I'd be quite happy just to say, yeah.
Do you want to go to number nine in your ranking?
Number nine. So do you want me to say number nine? So that we have a difference here.
You can go for number nine.
I'll do my number nine then, which is the first of the animated films, Resident Evil Degeneration.
Degeneration X, 2008's Resident Evil Degeneration. I didn't put it as low as that, but obviously we will get to my ranking.
Where you're ranked later.
Yeah.
So Resident Evil Degeneration, the first of the animated movies. I guess I have it so low, not because it particularly offended me in any particular way. It's nice to see those characters from the games again. I think mostly I put it quite low because I feel that there's more development and more life in these characters when they're in cutscenes of a game versus something that is presented as a film. I find the extras that they meet all quite sort of cardboard cutout, and then the final piece of the puzzle is just in the I guess just how CGI comes along from this one. I find everyone kind of glassy-eyed in it as well, particularly I'll have to pull up the name of the film to tell me which name of the character is.
NPC
Angela
character.
Yeah, Laura Bailey as Angela Miller. Angela Miller is the most like dewy-eyed, like, and the eyes are too big and shiny. It's very uncanny, and it looks like there's a dolly in this film. Leon's eyes aren't quite so jarring because he's a bit frowny, and Claire isn't in the movie quite so much. No. But Angela in particular, every time I looked at it, my brain was just going, "You're watching a CG movie here."
Yeah. So I didn't rewatch these because I'd only saw them last year. But I did refer to my notes. To some of the reviews I wrote from last year. I didn't write much. I said, Leon's hair is the silkiest it's ever been.
It's true.
His hair has never been silkier before or after this film. I think the first is the airport one, isn't it?
This is the airport one where it's Angela's brother was an eco activist. Yep. And then he gives himself a bit of G-virus and he gets a big arm on him. And then he gets a bit of G-virus and then he kills all those soldiers. They drop a crane on him. Then he gets blown up while they jump into water and Leon. I mean, it is kind of alluded to that it was a kiss, but he was blowing air into her mouth as well, so she didn't drown after they were exploded. And then the end of it is like her brother exerts a final bit of humanity just as the, you know, ubiquitous self-destruct system makes the lab thing he's on fall into oblivion and he's gone forever.
So I said decent zombie action in the first half, decent mutant monster action in the second, just overall a bit flat. And it feels sometimes like, yeah, you are watching the cutscenes between the game and you kind of want to take over and get involved yourself. So, but again, I think when we come to this ranking, I do rate the animated ones higher than the other ones, just because despite the fact that obviously they're not perfect and they're not great, they just feel a lot more like genuine Resident Evil to me, where the other ones are just action movies where Umbrella Corporation's in it and there are, oh, there's some zombies over there. All the zombie stuff I find in these animated films feels more Resident Evil. It feels like you could just walk into that world, walk into a lab, walk into an airport and take over and be in a Resident Evil game. Whereas I never ever feel like that with the
I think my big problem is stuff. with degeneration in particular of the things is I do feel like I'm in a Resident Evil game. I feel like I'm in the one I already mentioned, Resident Evil 6, the worst one.
Oh yeah.
Which is just like, I find it all really strained between shooting things I didn't care about, and there's just no development. You know, you don't have a villain like a Wesker or a Birkin, like the guy who is the environmentalist who's gone bad, or the scientist who's behind it all, who gets arrested at the end, and they still have time to do some banter with him while they arrest him, pretending they're going to shoot him. He goes, "Oh no, please! I'll give you all the money." Like, C-3PO, the bad scientist. Like they, it all just feels a little one dimension and flat. I have more affinity for the villains in another famous zombie franchise. It's come up recently. Dr. Kurian from House of the Dead. Kurian, what have you done? It makes Kurian look like, honestly, Hamlet. He's got so much depth to him. So yeah, that was my problem with degeneration. And the other thing, again, CG ages faster than you think, doesn't it? So then when you look at it versus some of the CG you see now, you're like, yeah, it's quite jarring.
Yeah, of course. Cool. I will obviously let you know my ranking when we get to it. I could go to my number. How are we doing this? Are we doing this like one
what's
by
your,
one?
What's your number 9? So go to your lowest one that hasn't been revealed yet.
Got you. Okay. This is going to be a little bit more difficult than the Halloween franchise because I think we were quite close on a lot of them. I think we're a bit all over the place with this.
We're all over the place here.
So my number 9 is Resident Evil Afterlife. 2010's Resident Evil Afterlife.
Okay. it's not that much higher. It's not that much higher for me.
So
okay.
This the one of the main reasons I hate this film is I am going to say hey. I think I've given it a single star rating just as I gave Final Chapter. The opening scene, which obviously has so at the end of the film before, which is Extinction, Alice finds loads of clones. Hundreds of clones, thousands of clones.
All the clones you could possibly want, literally.
At the start of Afterlife, her and what, 12 clones?
All in brilliant outfits.
All in brilliant outfits, all with like samurai swords, dual-wielded pistols and Uzis, hair, like really long, high ponytails, like with extensions. She looks absolutely immaculate. And absolutely fucks up dozens and dozens of Umbrella soldiers.
All of Umbrella, where even the office workers will pull a gun and try and shoot someone if they're up against the company. You've worked at a company, Ben, would you? Most of them would just be like, nah, I guess. Like,
I didn't write much about this one in my review either, but I said, the opening scene just shows off the worst of what this franchise has to offer. Like, I think this opening scene in itself, as like a completely enclosed scene, is that the word I'm trying to think of? Just for me, shows everything I need to know about this franchise and why I don't like it. It's just jumped up, just takes it too shiny. Like this is the survival horror element. We're gonna take down Umbrella. When Chris and Claire in Code Veronica X are going to take down Umbrella, they're like two people up against the biggest, scariest corporation ever. It's not big and scary when you're a superhero. It isn't.
Yeah.
It fucking isn't.
Yeah, and you can get and you can like eliminate them all as a superhero, but joke's on you, Alice, because old Bertie Wesker has got the drop on you because he has a bomb that can send the entire office building to the Shadow Realm or something like that. Like, literally, just like a big white explosion sends it to another dimension and wipe out all of your phones. But thankfully, don't worry, original Alice is she's escaped. So it's only the clones that
you're original Alice. Am I? Well, you think you're original, don't you? Yeah, I do think I'm original. Actually, you're a clone. What? It's just all there's all stuff like that going on. I think it's this film.
And this is where he sticks her and she loses her powers, so she can be weak for the. Is this one mostly set? Is it like a prison that they're or just the top of a building that they're in?
The top. It's like a prison, but it's like the top of a building. And landing a plane on the top of a building. My God. I've also put it's inconsequential as it is nonsensical. It's just like. Yeah. In terms of advancing the whole story of Alice versus Umbrella, it just does nothing. I feel like these films do this as well a lot. They sort of linger around the same sort of thing for too long. Something that's not quite interesting, or a place that's not interesting, or people that aren't interesting, and just has Alice there until she has to go full superhero mode and fuck everybody up.
Yeah, and she needs to win. And we get some monster inclusions this week. We kind of get Las Plagas, but it's mostly zombies that have got Blade 2 mouths.
Yeah. You get a Resident Evil 5 big axe wielding dude.
They have the Axeman who they fight in X-Men. They fight in a toilet.
They fight in like a shout. Yeah. There's like serious plumbing issues going on in there. It's just pissing down inside.
Yeah, I mean, years after a zombie apocalypse has wiped out the entire world, the plumbing is still going. Which is weird because they have to have a special rig that she's got like a bucket that she's going to have a shower with.
Yeah.
Yeah, the plumbing in that bathroom is able to, the sprinklers are going off, it's raining.
Totally honest, didn't even think of that, but what a gaping plot hole that is.
And there's the film producer guy that is, you know, definitely going to turn bad from the second you see him. There's the basketball player who becomes, you know, he's on the watch advert and he is a recurring character. He gets slurped off, but then does just reappear in the next one just because. This is a real mad one. And it goes all over the place. The thing is, then again, then this is one. This I think this is the one in this opening scene that you hated. That's the positive I'm taking from it. That opening scene. That's where I paused and went, he really loves his wife. Like every shot lingers on her so perfect. I mean, either that or the director of photography really loves his wife. One or the other. Like every shot lingers on her. She has the best outfits. She's. I mean, if you consider each of those clones a version of Alice, she's a good 90% of the cast.
Yeah, that's true. She is. And again, I feel annoyed. I feel annoyed at her, but I know it's not her fault. Like she's been told to do well. You know, this version of Alice is supposed to be she's so like inhuman and superhuman and posing all the time, and she can wield sawn off shotguns in each arm. Obviously, yeah, it's ridiculous, but yeah, I just don't feel I'm not. There are horror films essentially, but I don't feel any tension at any second, or even in the quiet moments when they try and give you jump scares, you know, which are pointless essentially, because all it is Alice walks into an area where. There's no one around. Alice looks around. Alice is jumped on by some sort of creature and immediately dispatches it and rinse it.
Yeah, she beats it, but then someone else will be got by these things. And then we get we rescue Claire at some point, who doesn't have a memory at the beginning when she first lands in the first place before she then flies to the building. The sanctuary that people have been going on about since Resident Evil 3 in Alaska, they find that, and it's a boat. We see people like Kmart and everyone who we meet in 3 captured on there. We meet Chris Redfield, who's in prison, and Claire doesn't remember that they're brother and sister. As this is where you get the sign of the time, your casting of the person that's like in the big TV show right now.
Yeah.
It's Wentworth Miller off the back of Prison Break as well, in another prison.
Yeah. But again, like Claire and Chris, I never believed it. Even the relationship of them together as well. Like it just never feel. It could be anyone. It could. Why need to make it major characters from the franchise? I have no idea.
You'd be almost as well not including them and then having that freedom to be exciting and to kill them off. And even if you're winking to the camera and saying, oh, this is kind of based on your Chris and Claire character, but this is our world, so we've made it different. You could maybe get away with that a little bit more. But I know they're doing it for a degree of fan service, and it's because... I don't want to hold my hands up to this one. I know that this entire series is not really made for me because it has Mortal Kombat movie energy, and there should be an official term for this if you want to invent one. But it is a film that has an age rating, and if you're below that age rating, it's going to be the best film you've seen. But if you're at the age that it's designed for and above, you'll see through it and know that it's absolute that it's not a great movie. Prime time for this for me and my age is, and I still stand by this being a great movie because it is, but the Mortal Kombat movie, it was at 15 when it came out in UK cinemas. I was far less than 15 at that time. I think I was like 10, 11. I'd have to look at the release date. However, when it came out on VHS from video, I was probably one of few people in the world that was looking forward for the home video release date of Mortal Kombat so I could rent it and then watch it. And when I watched it, I was blown away. I loved it. And like my cousin and then like some kids at school who had seen it, I'd be so hungry to hear about what happened in it. I was, oh, tell us. And they go, oh, yeah. And then they fight reptiles. And it's the same. It's the same with these Resident Evil films. If you weren't old enough to see this, but you were excited for it. And they were like, oh, yeah, and Chris Redfield's in this one. Wow!
Oh, turns Chris Redfield.
You would. Yeah, there should be a term for what that is, that excitement for this thing that you're not really allowed. So it's been built up as the coolest, most grown-up thing that you could have. But, yeah, it's wild, absolutely wild.
Okay.
But not in a good way. But yeah, he loves his wife.
It's wild. He loves his wife. That's what we take away from that. Yeah. He loves his wife. He loves his wife more than he loves Resident Evil as a franchise.
Yeah. I'll give him credit for it. You know, well, at this point, you're on Afterlife is movie 4. You've by now, and we'll come to the early ones, you've come so far away from anything other than some of the aesthetic choices of the movies. They're just doing what they want.
I'll be honest. From parts 3 through to 6, 3, 4, 5, and 6, I could ease... No, not even 3, 4, 5, and 6. 2, 3, 4, 5, and 6. They're fairly interchangeable for me. I mean, I definitely like Final Chapter the least, and I definitely like Extinction the most out of those. But in the middle, interchangeable. Could probably Afterlife and then the others we're going to discuss... switch them around easily. They're not.
Yeah.
I find them equally as annoying.
Bad. Yeah,
you could
swap a lot of these around for. You could swap a lot of these around for me as well. There's no huge marking quality changes.
What's your number 8?
My number 8. I'm following up with yet another animated film. The next one in the animated series, Damnation. A fictional Eastern European nation, probably quite a problematic representation of an Eastern European nation where they are, you know, a former Soviet country now looking to make ties with the EU. It's a little bit painful to watch in current circumstances. And then, you know, really like the representation of like people and what they, you know, the guy who is kind of anti-America but loves American things probably quite a terrible accent. But I did like, you know, I'm not just going to focus on those things. There are some interesting things in it, whether they talk about it's the Plagueis again, and they have the controller form. So the people who can kind of control the monsters.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Too many liquors again. But
loads of liquors. So if I remember correctly, the animation's a lot better in this one than it was.
The animation is better on this one, and we get Ada Wong doing like a big karate fight with the president of a company who is no, the president of a country, sorry, who is also like the best at martial arts.
Yeah.
Like again, Matrix level, Matrix level martial arts. And then we get like Lickers and a Tank versus Mr. X's.
Lickers and a Tank versus Mr. X's. Yeah. I remember that being quite fun, if I remember correctly.
Yeah. There's some fun action in it, but it is, yeah, it's, again, it's video game, especially Resident Evil 6 cutscenes, yeah. And it feels very disposable that you've got, hey, this isn't a city in America, this is somewhere in the, you know, in a country that you've never heard of and couldn't point to on a map, which we can just absolutely fuck up with big old monsters.
Yeah. This doesn't have any of the, I think that maybe the next animated one has two of the most over-the-top action scenes ever.
Yes. And it's the one I liked the best as well. But yeah.
Yeah, that's the one I like the best as well. But see, the thing is, right, this is where my reasoning is probably going to come undone a little bit. But if a scene like that, like the ones we're going to come to discuss, was in the live action films, it would make, I would like them less. But when they're in the animated films, for some reason, I'm a bit more like, I enjoy them more and I'm a bit more accepting of them. But in the animated films, I don't know. Maybe it's because the people doing them are major characters that I've come to know and love for years, whereas obviously the live actions are just Alice. Alice who? Who's that?
Who's that?
I think it suffers. Yeah. I think it does greatly suffer from having a new protagonist as well, because it is a bold choice, and of course we know, yes, he loves his wife.
Yeah, you got to stick by that, and he does six whole movies of it. Weren't even married in the first one. Doesn't direct the second one
exactly.
This animated one, there's nothing to dislike in particular. There are some credible action bits. I just found it a bit of nothing, essentially. Yeah. I think if I hadn't watched this, I would quite easily just catch up on stuff another time.
That's how I felt about the series, I think. I say series.
I haven't seen the series yet.
I think it was in like three or four episodes, but I felt like it was I felt a bit like that.
Is that Eternal Darkness?
Yeah.
Infinite Darkness. Eternal Darkness is something else.
It gets bogged down in like the politics of the world rather than the... Do you know what I mean? The survival horror element of things. I'm going to keep saying that. I will keep saying that. Which is, yeah. I guess I'll mention a bit more of that when I come to my next installment. If we're done with...
Yeah, I've got nothing else to say about that one. And that's its biggest problem, that I don't have too much to say about it. It's whacking your action figures together.
Always a good time. So this is where I think the biggest difference in ranking for us is that my next movie, number 8 for me, is Resident Evil Apocalypse from 2004. So essentially Resident Evil 2, because it takes a lot of Resident Evil. It's a weird one where from the games it kind of feels like we've got some characters of Resident Evil 1, but also it's set in the place in Raccoon City in the way of Resident Evil 2, and also there's big bads from Resident Evil 3 as well. So like it's an amalgamation of that. So when I rewatched this, I was a bit like, this one's all right, isn't it? As far as I remember, surely. But that jump from Alice's character, from how she was in the original movie to how she is in this one, really, really ruined it for me.
Really got you.
It really got me, where I was like, oh God. Because obviously you've got Jill Valentine in this, you've got stars to a degree, although I think they're pretty much given...
Or get machine gunned.
Huge amount of disrespect by getting machine gunned. But Alice's character development from the first film to this, now she's an unstoppable, all-knowing badass. And I was like, and why exactly? Why? And she just, it overshadows every other character in the film. So the fact that we've got Jill Valentine in it, the fact that we've got Nemesis in this, even though, yeah, he's a bit rubbery. And for some reason, they've humanized him. Like giving him a bit of a, oh, actually, there's a human in there somewhere. Obviously, it's the guy from the first movie.
It's a good one. Yeah, the guy who should have, in all, we'll come to it more in Resident Evil 1, but he should have played Max Payne. He has the perfect Max Payne face.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I didn't think of that, but Yeah, Max Payne hair as well. Yeah. I think humanizing Nemesis is unforgivable. Unforgivable. I'm not going back on that. And I think that's why I went from, this film's kind of all right. Oh, we're in, at least it's a bit, I don't want to say scary, but at least it's a bit, it's in a city in the dark and it's a group of people trying to survive and go from A to B. That is when I think this franchise does the best, is when it's people trying to survive and they've got a goal, you know, they've got to go from A to B and survive. And but for some reason...
So it's the humanizing Nemesis that got it for you. I'll jump on this and defend it ever so slightly.
Okay.
I like it because it is like just quite a silly action movie. There are films in the franchise that are of higher quality than this, but I do really enjoy watching this one for a couple of reasons. I think it has some of the best kind of fun and memorable one-liners or moments. A lot of those come from Jill Valentine, who's in it, in, you know, maybe this is the thing, again, I'm going to absolutely like slate Welcome to Raccoon City in a little bit, but I like that she has the outfit from the game and she does things like headshot zombies really easily. And I think she's possibly... Would I have forgiven this entire series if Jill Valentine had been the lead, even if she had the same badassery? And effectively, she almost has superpowers. She just doesn't have a virus. She's just really cool and has loads of cool moves. So I really liked that. I like Carlos in it as well, played by
the guy from The Mummy.
His name is it Oded? What's his last name?
Oded Fair.
Oded Fair.
Yeah, so he's in the Mummy franchise, isn't he?
He is great.
Definitely a weird sort of casting. Doesn't quite feel like Carlos, but you know, that's not a character that I think we need to worry about too much.
You see, I like him because I do feel of him as a... Like, when I look at Oded Fair, I was like, he is an actor from films. So when I see him in a film, I'm like, yes. When I see... sadly, and he's, you know, he's doing far better than I am in the world of acting... Yeah. When I see Wentworth Miller, I'm like, there's an actor from television in my movie.
Also, you've got Mike Epps, who, sure, his roles play for laughs, but this was
MVP.
LJ. This was obviously around about the time when action/horror movies of this era needed some comic relief, I guess. We get it in Mike Epps' LJ.
And Mike Epps' LJ is probably the reason I enjoy this movie. For the utterances of just a few phrases, but
it's
the main
kind of
one
unbelievable
being,
that he survives and all of stars die. That is
but that's the best, and the best bit of it, the moment of this entire movie for me is after we meet him in the first instance in the Raccoon City Police Department, handcuffed to a clearly zombie sex worker who gets like shot and then he's released. And the next time we see him, he's driving down the street. And what does he say to that man in the road? GTA, motherfucker.
Oh, motherfucker.
Where he flips a zombie over the boot of his car and then gets distracted by stripper zombies walking out and then like crashes his car. Oh. He's such a fun comic relief character. And that's what makes me enjoy. And the same when he's like looking around the school for the little girl to rescue the scientist. But
So talking about the little girl to rescue, obviously it's Jared Harris playing Dr. Ashford. So again, they're trying to lean on the wider characters from the game franchise as well, in terms of like Ashford's as well. There's also a guy who I'm like, is that not just supposed to be Wesker? Is it Major Kane?
Yeah, but they hadn't cast him yet. So it's like, yeah, I'm not Wesker, definitely not, because he gets chomped up by zombies on this, doesn't he? Yeah. So he isn't Wesker, but you would be forgiven for thinking that that's what they were.
Yeah, why not just make
that's
it,
what they were going
just
for?
Make him Wesker, isn't it? God.
This is where Captain Friendzone makes his first appearance as Dr. Isaac.
Yeah, of course, Captain Friendzone himself. I think if this film was possibly, say, it had Jill Valentine as the lead, as you mentioned, and there was like an ever-present nemesis constantly after them, this horrible, unstoppable thing, he wanted to kill all of STARS and hunt them down, and they were just trying to survive while also trying to get out of Raccoon City, which is going to be blown up, and there was a countdown or something, you know? I probably would have enjoyed it, but the Alice plus Nemesis is humanized. That was it for me.
Blown it.
I logged out.
Blown it for you. Yes, that's your number eight. Yeah, I think there's a good film in here, and I guess I'm just a glass half full kind of guy, Ben. I can see those bits. I know you could remake it, and like you could, you know, fair play to them for doing the Nemesis as practical. It does look rubbery, but I love old Godzilla movies. So there you go. So that's what you get. And Alice, yeah. Were I making it, were I Paul W.S. Anderson, maybe if I wanted my wife to be in the rest of the movies, maybe I could have had them give her this one off and have them find her at the end, having done a Resident Evil 2 movie first.
But also, how awesome was the end of the first movie of her walking out into Raccoon City and a destroyed Raccoon City and cocking that shotgun ready to kick ass. That was awesome. If she was Alice from the first movie in that one, then fine. But for some reason, she's upgraded. She's upgraded all her points, all of her...
Well, she's leveled up in the course of the first game, and she's gone through a skill tree and gone, right, I can toss a motorbike onto a licker and shoot it now.
It feels like a cheat code. It feels like she's found a cheat code. And, you know, we all enjoy deep down.
She's got a cheat code for like more all these powers now, and then by afterlife she's got infinite lives as well. That's what all those clones are.
No way. Okay, so what are we looking at now?
So my number seven, rattle through this, because my number seven was Afterlife.
Okay. Yep.
So what was your number seven?
So my number seven is wait. So your number seven was Afterlife. Did you say your number eight?
Yeah, my number eight was Damnation.
Damnation. So my number seven is Resident Evil Retribution.
Retribution. Okay.
Now I'm thinking back to it. I'm like, so for me, Retribution, Apocalypse. I know I keep doing this and I keep, it's like I'm bargaining with myself. Retribution, Apocalypse, and Afterlife. I feel like they all piss me off in the same sort of way.
Equal measures.
So trying to rank these three was probably the most difficult. The things that bother me about this is it has got so many iconic game characters, and I feel like they're all done to the point where I was like, hang on a minute, I didn't even realize that was that character. So you've got Leon, got it. You got Ada, she serves a purpose. Jill's in it again. Barry Burton's in this.
Yeah.
I did not even realize it was Barry Burton until someone shouted Barry, and I said, no.
Surely you recognized him from his body warmer, his gilet.
I didn't.
You didn't recognize him from his gilet.
What was going on with me? Anyway, at this point of the franchise, so this is what, number five?
Yes.
The intro with, my name is Alice, I've had a gutsful. If you need to wrap up the convoluted, unbelievable, senseless storyline with a prologue at the start of every movie with my name is Alice and this is my story, then I'm afraid, who is watching the fifth installment in a franchise and needing a recap at the start of every film?
Yeah,
that's relentlessly terrible.
Sadly, Ben, all interchangeable for me too. I've ranked this one slightly more highly for some of these reasons. It's cheesy as hell, but I like the opening scene where they all get captured, and it's the one that's shot backwards.
Oh, the backwards one. Do you know what? Yeah. Seeing it backwards and then seeing it forwards, but maybe from slightly different angles.
Yeah, and much quicker. It's done really slowly backwards, and then you see it like pay out in like 30 seconds forwards.
Yeah.
That was fun. I kind of like that this one is nonsense and just a reason to give it like a number of set pieces, but with kind of the positioning that, yes, this is like a virtual testing environment, and underground the suburbia from the beginning of the Dawn of the Dead remake. There is the Moscow, there is the Tokyo. And basically, like, oh, I'm in the Tokyo room now, and then we'll do that fight on the Shibuya crossing. And now we're in Moscow, and we'll fight Los Ganados, and we'll do like a car chase scene with them.
They were like the zombies from like Dead Snow, weren't they? They didn't have a place in Resident Evil. It felt like they just like, meant that to be... Dead Snow was pretty popular. Yeah, get them in there as well.
I think they're meant to be Ganados, aren't they? But like, it's like you throw everything out. There's another bloody liquor. Get over it, guys. Give me a Hunter.
Oh yeah. To be fair, better liquor though this time. Like,
yeah, it's big liquor,
big scary, a bit more like big scary bioweapon, but gets dispatched so easily in the final battle between the big liquor and Alice. So easily.
Well, because it's not the final battle. The final battle is a sort of tag team match between what is it? It's Alice and Alice and Ada versus Mind Control Jill Valentine and Michelle Rodriguez is back this time in clone form. Everyone's back in clone form. Colin Salmon, having been chunked in the first one, he's a clone now and he's back. Rain's back. Several instances of Rain. She's a good percentage of the
characters. There's a Rain who can't shoot a gun, and it can just point and click. It's like a camera. Oh.
And there's a Rain that's brilliant at shooting guns.
And I think this film expects too much of its audience. It expects its audience to A, remember all the nonsense that it's put in the films, B, respect the nonsense that's been in the films, and C, like, now make sense of all of those things in a new story. Like, it's too much.
I'm here for it. And in the final battle, I love that they do Mortal Kombat X-ray moves.
Yeah. Oh my god, yeah. What was that about? That was, I know, obviously he made Mortal Kombat, Paul W.S. Anderson. So has he just gone,
was MK10? Well, MK9, I think, had the first X-ray. Did Mortal Kombat have X-ray moves in it before this movie? I'd have to look that up.
Yeah.
But, like, I love it how Rain gives Alice the heart-stopping punch, but she gets better from it, whereas her other character... It might not be Ada, actually. It might be... Oh, you know who it is? It's our mate, the basketball player / watch model. Who was in Retribution or Afterlife or one of those ones she met in that prison. He comes, so the guy from Afterlife.
Yeah, what's his name?
He comes back. His name
Luther
is
West.
Luther. So yeah, Luther comes back and Rain punch stops his heart when she has virus to give her extra punching power. But yeah, I'm kind of here for the nonsense on this one.
I think at this point
I was like, this movie is nonsense, and I found it to be disposable enough that it was just absolute BS. So I kind of liked it for that.
When I commented on Letterboxd, somebody said, this is my favourite a lot, like when I was slating it, and I was like, oh man. Ooh. I don't know what it is. It's almost like the films just break you after a while, and once you're broken, it's almost like all of those grievances you have with it are just so much more apparent. So obviously I was broken very early into Resident Evil 2. And then from that point onwards, I couldn't get over.
Couldn't recover.
I couldn't recover, but I couldn't forgive it for anything.
Yeah, so that was your number 7, right?
That's my number 7, yes.
Right, so number 6 for me, it's our newest entry, Resident Evil. Welcome to Raccoon City.
Yeah, I guess we could be fairly vague with this because we've obviously already reviewed it.
Done a whole blooming episode.
Link, so if you're really interested,
link in the show notes.
Link in the show notes. If you're interested in finding out what we had to think about Resident Evil, Welcome to Raccoon City, 2001's Resident Evil, Welcome to Raccoon City. There's a whole episode.
2001's, 2021's. You've lost 20 years of your life.
What did I say?
Then.
What did I say?
2001.
Jesus. 2021. I think this is the an episode on maybe December the 3rd. I'm not sure what number episode that was.
Late last year, but you can can go and find that. We will link to the episode. I can give you the quick. I'll give you the quick rundown of it. Things that I liked. I like some of the scenes and the settings that the guys put together in that movie. Like, they really lovingly recreated some of the areas from the films. And it's nice that the characters were in there. Mm-hmm. But, one more thing. I like the way they did the degeneration of the zombies. It wasn't just you fall, you basically collapse and you're a zombie now. But what I don't like is that everyone's awful. No one's good at their jobs. These people are a special forces team and everyone is just like like the work experience kid.
Yeah.
Everyone is awful at their job and it's massively rushed. Like, I think I gave the example on the episode that if you wanted to do a Resident Evil, and you highlighted it in this chat as well, Ben, like, you don't have the pacing to make it a slow exercise in dread and terror. At its best, Resident Evil could be Alien and Resident Evil 2 could be Aliens, where it goes all out action. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't, because what it feels like is a mess that you rush through.
It feels incredibly rushed. And I think I read something somewhere that the director, Johannes Roberts, was like a big fan of the games. I don't believe it. I feel like he got the gig, then he went and played Resident Evil 2, the remake, and then he made this film. That's what I think happened.
Call him out. You have to go at him and gatekeep him. So, in the save room on level B1 of the laboratory complex, what key item do you find? What happens when you? How many times do you have to search Wesker's desk to find roll of film B? And what picture is on there when
sexy
you do it?
And picture of Rebecca Chambers.
Oh, don't tell him. If he listens to this,
don't
you'll
tell
know.
Him. I would tell him. Sorry.
Bleep it. Bleep that out. So then ask him. Because
they've recreated so much from Resident Evil 2, the remake, 2019 remake, that it just feels like he's watched and played that game. And then he's also added, oh, there's some other characters from the first game. Oh, yeah, we'll get them in there. This, if Leon got done dirty in the last film, he is done unbelievably dirty in this film, making him like a rookie who pretty much ain't got a clue what's going on. I think Kaya Scodelario is all right, and I think Hannah John Kamen as Jill Valentine is also all right, but you know, it's all just all right. I mean, that's a weird Wesker.
That's the eight man as Bertie Wesker,
yeah, that's a weird Brian Irons. It's just weird. It makes me feel weird. Sure, they've recreated some scenes from the games pretty well, that's pretty cool to see, but story-wise, character-wise, and everything else wise, it feels rushed. I think rushed is correct.
Yeah, it's just madness. How many scene transitions do we get that just has like a 3 o'clock in the morning, 3 hours until the city blows up? It's just so chopped and rushed. It's
we've already
times.
Mentioned humanizing Nemesis, but humanizing Lisa Trevor in this. Now, I know in the games, giving her a story and an understanding and we're supposed to sort of feel for her in this is fine, but she still wants to kill you.
Yeah.
She still
Lisa Trevor is a... Yeah, I think you can humanize her. She's a tragic character in the games, but I felt I got more of that depth from... Let's be brutal. Like, a little bit of flavor text in a video game, like, that you could skip over if you wanted to.
Of course.
Whereas in this, what we got her as is, like, Lisa Trevor, you know... Hero?
Yeah, pretty much. Hero. She's been living in an orphanage all these years, but she's also hero. Yeah. There's not much
hero,
else you
but
could
then
say.
We leave her to be, but you know, we're quite happy to leave her to be nuked with the entire town. She's not that much of a hero.
Again,
there we go.
Smaller scale, it's just Raccoon City. I like that. But it feels rushed, and I think I had so many hopes and expectations for it. I just wanted it to be fun, you know, but it was just, it felt like it was there's fan service, and there's also like trying to squeeze in so many little nods where you go, oh, yeah. Oh, that's that. Yeah. Oh, that's that.
Oh, yeah. That's nice, isn't it?
But it just didn't feel very genuine, I think. Yeah.
Yeah. Got a whole episode on that. Get yourselves your fill of it. What's your number six, man?
So my number six is Resident Evil Extinction from 2007. As I've already mentioned, this sort of run from 2 to 6, I'm kind of, not on board with particularly. The fact that it goes from bloody hell, Raccoon City got nuked, and on the news they're just going, it was a terrible accident, to suddenly, years later, the whole world has been taken over by the T-virus. Yeah. If Alice's character has no character, like, there's too much character growth from 1 to 2, then the world building from 2 to 3 is just treated the same. The only thing I've written down is these films have a major hard-on for that laser corridor scene. Holy shit.
Because it's back again, as is Captain Friendzone. Yeah, so he's back. His Captain Friendzone is back again after his brief introduction in the last one. He's been doing science for 5 years with loads of Alice clones, trying to find the best one, looking for the original. And he's got loads of them just out by the bins around the back when they've been killed in this perfect recreation of the end of Resident Evil 1 he's made. This is where we start to lose like all perspective of that we followed the games, right?
Yeah, pretty much. It's there's obviously crows. But you know, the crows in Resident Evil, you're like, oh, they're harmless, aren't they? Oh, no, they're attacking. This is kind of ridiculous. There's like hundreds of them all attacking at the same time. There's so many zombies, like so many, like massive, unbelievable hordes of zombies. And again, I can't keep saying in the games, but in the games, it's rarely hordes, is it? It's like shambling zombies in corridors and narrow
alleyways. And you're given the impression that there are streets like that, but the settings of the games are kind of away from that, because you are trying to pick your way through quiet streets and kind of areas that have been blocked by rubble, because that's the nature of the way that the games work.
And we've still got like Umbrella Corporation dudes underground, like going, come on, we got to sort this out. We want to get back up there. The world's literally ended. And this is the introduction of Ali Larter's Claire Redfield as well.
Claire Redfield. Where do we know the Claire Redfield from?
Ali Larter is in Heroes as Claire. I think was her name Claire in Ali Larter?
Also a Claire. I know her from. She's bloody Claire. She's Claire from Final Destination.
Oh yeah. Look. Oh my God.
Claire Rivers.
Oh, she loves being a Claire. Claire. She's in Heroes as not a Claire. She's a Nikki/Tracy.
There she is. Nikki/Tracy. The double one, right? There's a good and a bad, right?
Yeah,
I remember.
Right. I don't recognize the character from the games in any way. It's just a person. And they've got like a caravan fighting their way through the hordes, and it's like in the Nevada desert. It's just a sort of Mad Max-esque zombie apocalypse film that doesn't really feel like a Resident Evil film.
Big Mad Max vibes from this one. They go to Las Vegas to try and get some fuel, and at one point, a young cinema goer at the time, certain young Master Zachary... Zachary Snyder went to the cinema back in 2007 and saw this and thought, one day I'll do a zombie film in Las Vegas.
You say just a young Zachary Snyder. I think this is after Dawn of the Dead. He'd already done one.
He'd already done one and thought, oh, my zombie film seems to have been quite well received. Where do I go next? And then he sat down at the cinemas and he saw this.
and then he went, here's
a worse idea.
Here's a slightly worse idea. There's no bloody robots in this, I'll tell you what.
That was the big, he came out, that was it, like 2007, Zack Snyder coming out of the cinemas having seen Resident Evil Extinction and said, there's some pretty mad stuff in that, or having psychic powers and those birds and everything like that.
I mean, the psychic power stuff in this is just like, oh, come on.
She's already
so like superpowered to like a ridiculous degree. Why does she need to now have telepathic powers as well?
Yeah,
because
There is no reason. And then Captain Friendzone himself turns himself, I guess, into sort of a version of the kind of the Ouroboros squiddy monster slash one of the kind of Stretch Armstrongs from from Resident Evil Code Veronica, the sort of stretchy armsman.
What's it called? The Bandersnatch.
They're called Bandersnatches, yeah.
Oh, man. So overall, I mean, I've rated it higher in the list. What did I say I've rated it at?
It's your number six?
It's my number six, so yeah.
I've got it higher still, Ben. Don't you worry. I think it's nonsense, but you've still got some... You got some real key players for me still. You've still got your LJ is there. Unfortunately, he falls into the get bitten, don't tell people.
Oh wait,
trap.
I just remembered who else is in it.
Ashanti.
Ashanti's in it. She gets pecked. Did she get pecked to death?
Pecked to death by crows, and then I guess exploded in a fiery bus explosion. Yeah. So I'm not a coroner. Never claimed to be. I'm not sure what did for her, but.
She would have survived. She would have just pecked her eyes out and left the rest alone.
Yeah.
She could have
crows, tiny, famously tiny mouths. They couldn't have eaten, yeah.
No.
That's her. But yeah.
Next up
we got my number five, which is the final part in the animated saga, Resident Evil Vendetta.
Ah, okay. So yeah, I've not got to any of the animated films in my list just yet.
It's your top three.
it's my top three. But I think one of the reasons I was into this, as we've already mentioned, is, again, I think the animation gets slightly better from Damnation to this one. There's a slight jump in the animation. But there are two action scenes. This one in particular is Chris and Leon in a corridor versus loads of zombies inside.
I was going to mention that one. I really liked that. It's really good.
It's great. Some sort of dance fight thing. This is the thing. This is where you think, I don't look at them two and think, oh my God, they're super powered. I look at them and think, they're well trained.
Yeah.
That's what I think. Like all the maneuvers feel like, sure, it's over the top. Sure, it's ridiculous, but.
What I liked from this one and that particular scene is that you've got two characters in this computer generated world and they're not speaking, but you can tell that they are different characters because they have a very different style of movement. So Leon is very athletic and finessed, and he's, you know, like kicking a zombie's legs out from under them and then shooting them. And then he's like twisting them around and like using things. Whereas Chris Redfield is a man of big fist punches. He's there.
He's a boulder puncher.
Like, he's suplexing him over the place. He is all over it. And he's got like, yeah, it's...
And Chris and Leon don't appear alongside each other in anything else, do they? Resident Evil 6, they cross paths a bit.
They cross over in Resident Evil 6, yeah. But, you know...
Apart from that...
Less said about that, the better.
So I think that's pretty cool to see both of those guys in it. And then there's a Chris versus... Who's he fighting with a gunfight where they're all... Even though they're shooting at each other, they're missing and they're 2 meters away.
Oh, the bad man who, again, really poor HR policy at Umbrella. He is bad because his wedding was attacked by a drone strike.
Oh yeah, of course.
And he's still got his wife's severed arm, but she looked before being blown up and just being an arm. She looked a bit like Rebecca Chambers, so he fancies stealing Rebecca Chambers and making
Also, the Rebecca Chambers bit at the start when they're in where are they in like a laboratory
laboratoire
that all that stuff's really effective, I think, like her going out the room and then coming back in and all of that stuff is genuinely quite, that seems like a place I would like to explore in a Resident Evil game. I just thought add some awesome sequences. It's like a quintessential cast of Resident Evil characters. And even though I can't remember, but I'm sure it'll remind me, I've also written a truly grotesque final form for the big bad.
Now, what does he turn into? Oh, yeah. He turns into like a glowy heart, sort of intelligent, slightly talking tyrant. He's all...
Yeah.
He looks like... You know when you're a kid and you've got a scab and your mom and dad tell you not to pick at it? He looks like what'll happen if you pick at it.
Ooh. Yeah, that, all the tyrants, they've always got a big heart on the outside that's glowing, and you're like, I wonder what bit I should attack.
Yeah, obviously when Umbrella were making their monster designs, they were like, right, what famous scientists can we use for our monster design? So, well, I'd like to do in my bioweapons what famous genius scientist Dr. Robotnik has done with his machines. It's have big glowing weaknesses.
Yeah, big glowing weaknesses. Yeah. And he's a bit Bane, isn't he, as well?
He is a little bit Bane.
There's some Bane characters, aren't there? Some Bane tyrants.
Yeah, he's got like a big hunchback tyrant mate who's got a man in the Iron Mask.
Yeah,
vibe about him, but yeah, it's a mad one. It's another mad one. So of all the animated ones, probably the one worth watching the most.
Yeah. I think I agree there. So from my five down to two is all the ones we've already discussed now. So
do us a quick countdown then.
I'll do you a quick countdown. My number five is Resident Evil: Welcome to Raccoon City.
Okay.
For reasons we've discussed, I just think I've put that ahead of all of the other Mila Jovovich ones just because it doesn't fill me with as much rage as the others do, which is fair enough, I guess. Then it is Resident Evil Degeneration. So I've gone for Degeneration, then Damnation, and then Vendetta, just because, yeah, as I said, they feel more like I'm watching live action CGI. I'm watching set pieces from the games, the FMVs, the sequences from those. And it feels like the Resident Evil universe, whereas I find it hard to believe that with the live action ones.
So that takes you right up to where, sorry?
Takes me right up to number one.
That takes you right up to number one. And in that case then, so my five was Resident Evil Vendetta, my four was Extinction. Retribution is number three because I like that nonsense, and that takes me to number two. So that means we've only got one film left to talk about. I'll reveal that because of its stupidity and GTA motherfucker, Resident Evil Apocalypse is my number one. My number two must be your number one, therefore, by process of elimination, ipso facto.
Oh, wow. Oh, wait, your number one is Resident Evil Apocalypse?
Yeah, because I just love that crazy shit. Although, I think I said to you in the chat before we started, I will absolutely agree. Resident Evil, the original, is a better film. I'm going to make a bold statement. For a film I put second in the ranking rather than first, I would say Resident Evil 1 is a slightly tighter script and better lighting away from being a genuinely good movie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So Resident Evil 1, I feel like, has its own like kind of style and atmosphere and vibe that, while it doesn't feel, it feels as close to Resident Evil as any of these other films have got. And again, close quarters, a small environment, a claustrophobic environment, and a band of survivors all just trying to, with the same goal, trying to get out of there, that I could have done without the amnesia stuff. I think I wasn't entirely sold by it. And When people, I've suddenly remembered who I am, and then suddenly they go full supervillain.
I'm a baddie now.
I'm a baddie now. It's like that is a bit ridiculous. And also with these, I find, especially with this one, I think the more I see this film, the less I appreciate it. Now, it's been about probably loads of times. This is a film, whenever I see it on TV, I'll stop and watch it.
You'll stick it on.
But I feel like because I've seen it so much, I'm just so aware of all the things I don't like about it now. So, yeah. The zombies are a bit dodgy. They're a bit bleedy-eyed. There are some kind of creepy moments when someone you think's dead, floating in water, oh, they're alive. Cerberus dogs.
The hand against the glass. Yeah.
Hand against the glass, yeah. Cerberus dogs look good because they're actual dogs with, like, makeup on. They're not CGI.
They're great, and I've heard a little bit of trivia on that one, that the dogs had to be especially well trained because they put meat on them originally, and they would keep licking it off because I don't know if you know this about dogs, love a bit of meat, they'll eat that up.
So we did cover this on early episode of the podcast back in 2018, September 28th, 2018. So if you go and find that episode, not sure what number it was, but yeah, this Alice in this feels like a person. She feels like a person who's trying to survive against the odds, She's uncovering the mysteries of Umbrella and her own identity, obviously, and there's a bit of a espionage subplot going on as well. And we genuinely are pissed off at the Red Queen because she's making things difficult for them at every turn. And the first appearance of the laser corridor is effective. It does make you think, shit!
Yeah. Yeah, it does. And, you know, I think we got this to talk about then another main feed episode coming up soon. Is it the start of Colin Salmon being chunked in movies?
Yeah, so I didn't notice this, but the way he gets diced into cubes happens to him, not to the same degree, but definitely very similarly, in Alien vs. Predator. So we'll be discussing that on the next main episode of the podcast. He's been chunked.
Colin Salmon, destined to be cubes.
Destined to be cubes.
But so, yeah, there's a lot to like about this movie. You know, despite its flaws, like I say, there are bits where you can see the seams. There's a bit when they first encounter the zombies in like kind of an industrial warehouse area, which, if the lighting was better, it's just a little bit light. It looks like it's been filmed on a soundstage in a studio somewhere versus in one of those locations.
Sorry. Go ahead. I like the score. I like the inclusion of some songs. Like, obviously, it's got a bit of a early 2000s metal vibe. There's Slipknot. There's Marilyn Manson. There's various things like that. And also, throughout this franchise, actually, it leans heavier into a Perfect Circle. There's like two or three Perfect Circle songs which are in it. And I think in one of the films, they even try and implement the Perfect Circle song into a score. I think it's the song The Outsider. And I think that's good. I think that works well. That sounds cool. It kind of like adds to the vibe, and it's a bit of a throwback to this film, which is obviously a bit of a time capsule now to 2002.
It's a very 2002 movie, isn't it? But like, yeah, I think genuinely probably the best Resident Evil film they've ever made. Took criticism for not being like the games at all, apart from having Umbrella in it. But I'll kind of take that because it is probably the best standalone film, despite not being my favourite of the series.
Yeah. The liquor looks a bit shoddy.
It's a bit 2002 CGI, doesn't it?
2002 CGI, but you know, we can forgive it, I think. I think I'll need to maybe not watch it for a little while, so when I go back I'll appreciate it because I think I've overdone it. But that's my number one, and it's your number two.
My number two, so yeah, to make this official, my number one, officially stated, Top of the Pops, Resident Evil, Apocalypse. There's so many, like, that genre of Apocalypse, Afterlife, Retribution.
Yeah. Oh man, it's so difficult to follow because it's just like, they're just such cookie cutter sequel words, aren't they? I mean, I guess, yeah, they are pretty much.
Speaker of the Ooze, Back in the Habit, Judgment Day. Judgment Day could be a Resident Evil subtitle.
Yeah, it could. I've got your whole ranking on the screen now, so we can see Apocalypse is number one. Top four are all live action. And then a little bit later with the animated films, Final Chapter, we're both not into as much. I've gone for Resident Evil 1 as my favorite. I was a bit I think I had Vendetta there initially, but then I was like, yeah, but really. The first film probably deserves a bit more credit because it's all right, you know.
Yeah, it came first. It's got to sit out there.
It came first. And then I've ranked the animated ones quite highly. Then Raccoon City, Welcome to Raccoon City. And then it's all the rest. The rest of the Mila Jovovich ones that are interchangeable, I think. Final Chapter is definitely the worst, but you could interchange 6, 7, 8, and 9 for me. They're all equally frustrating.
Well, Ben, we've done it. We've done it to ourselves. We've got through all these movies, and now we've shared with the good folks that listen to this. If you enjoyed this, and then you would like to hear us genuinely be enthusiastic and positive about the games, apart from possibly 6, which is bad, then let us know. We'll put some time on the calendar to talk some lovely Resident Evil games, because we could talk enthusiastically and joyously about those.
Yeah, if this has been too negative for you, we'll do the games, and then you'll hear us absolutely adore them.
I think we did say something good about every single one, though. even in this. And if these are your favorite movies, anyone listening, that's all right, because there's totally fun fine. Things in it. Maybe you also love Paul W.S. Anderson's Wife. You might
think. It's likely. I think you should.
If so, also go ahead and watch Ultraviolet, because if you thought she had a lot of good costume changes and all the best moves in these films, my goodness, you need to watch Ultraviolet immediately, because she's changing outfits every 5 minutes and wins everything.
Amazing. Okay, there we go. So thanks very much for listening. If you enjoyed the show, if you are listening to the show on Patreon, then you already are a patron, so thank you. But if you enjoyed the show, become a patron over at patreon.com/horrorhangout. Thanks to everybody who supports us on that platform. We'll be doing some more bonus content. We'll confirm what that is in the coming weeks. Thanks to Kovac Kaiman for our theme music. Oh, actually, Taj Easton for our theme music this week. Slightly different with the bonus klaxon. Thanks to Acast hosting the show. Please consider giving us a rate and a review. Head over to the Facebook group, Horror Hangout Board of Advisors, for more. Thanks to my co-host, Andy, for being a right horror dude and fan of Mila Jovovich, almost as much as Paul.
No one's that much.
W.S. Anderson?
Yeah, there are two Andersons. If it's Paul Thomas Anderson that loves Mila Jovovich more than W.S. Anderson.
Have a word.
My goodness.
Disgraceful.
Trouble in paradise.
Right. Thanks for listening, everyone. See you later.
Bye, everyone. Bye for now.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Do you ever feel like your brain is on overdrive and your mind is constantly racing? The plans, worries, and to-do lists are never ending. Calm can help your mind take a break from the noise by softening anxiety symptoms in the moment and helping you cope with day-to-day stressors. Calm is the number one app for sleep and meditation, giving you the power to calm your mind and change your life. Their meditations range to fit your needs each day, from anxiety and stress, relaxation and focus, to building habits and taking care of your physical well-being. They even have expert-led talks on topics such as tips for overcoming stress and anxiety, handling grief, improving self-esteem, caring for relationships, and more. For listeners of the show, Calm is offering an exclusive offer of 40% off a Calm premium subscription at calm.com/stressless. Go to calm.com/stressless for 40% off unlimited access to Calm's entire library. That's calm.com/stressless.